PRRTCRWRCT Pittsburgh.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Norman, your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Infections like polio, smallpox, and measles used to be as common as coronaviruses today, but now we have life-saving vaccines for those and other diseases. Sadly, too many children still go unvaccinated. Choosing to delay or refuse vaccine puts your child and other children at serious risk. So talk to your child's doctor today about vaccines. And for more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
Folk Songs of America, another program by that inimitable singer of America's own songs, Hughie Leadbelly Leadbetter. Leadbelly can sing so many songs and so many different kinds that it's often a problem which to choose. How many songs do you know, Hughie?
Well, I can sing 500 songs and never go back to the first one.
My goodness, that's quite a mess of songs. Well, today, Leadbelly's decided to give you a cross-section of his repertoire, one or two samples of several different types of songs he sings. The first is a group of work songs, beginning with the old favorite, Grey Goose.
Now, this is a Grey Goose. The preacher went out hunting down in my home on a Sunday when he's supposed to have been at church, and he was a pastor of that church. And he went out to try to kill a Grey Goose instead of being at church, and the Amen sisters found it out. And they was talking it over the next week. Said, did you know the Reverend went out trying to kill him a goose? Well, one of the sisters said, Lord, Lord, Lord. And that's where that Lord, Lord come in. So I'm going to tell you about that preacher. And that old Grey Goose is still laughing at him yet. One Sunday morning, Lord, 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 preacher went and heard it. Lord, 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 he carried along with shotgun. Lord, 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 don't come a Grey Goose. Lord, Lord, Lord. Gun went off the bloom. Lord, 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 down come the Grey Goose. Lord, 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 he was 6 weeks a-falling. Lord, 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 he was 6 weeks a-hauling. Lord, 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 then my wife and your wife. Lord, 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 give a better picking. Lord, 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 they were 6 weeks a-picking. And they put him on a pair, boy. He was 6 weeks a-falling. Then they put him on a table, and the fork wouldn't stick him, and the knife couldn't cut him, then they throw him in the hog pen, and the hog couldn't eat him. Lord, 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 they broke the hog's teeth out. Lord, 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 they took him to the sawmill. Lord, 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 and the saw couldn't cut him, and they broke the saw teeth out. And the last time I see him, he was flying across the ocean with a long string of golden. Lord, 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 and all quack, quack, quack. Lord, Lord, Lord.
Now here's a song about another kind of work, cotton picking. Another favorite, boll weevil.
Now this is a boll weevil, and this is a boll weevil come through down south. It was a man, he's a sharecropper, and he used to raise 25 and 30 bales of cotton. And after the boll weevil come through, he didn't make but one bale. And while the boll weevil done come and gone, this is his talking. I'm gonna sing it to you in a song. You can talk about the ladies, the ladies of your own. These boll weevils, they will rob you of a home. They're looking for a home. They're looking for a home. One time I seen a boll weevil, he was sitting on a square. The next time I seen a boll weevil, he had his whole family there. He's a looking for a home. 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 Mama taking a boll weevil, he put him in the ice. People women said to the farmer, you're treating me mighty nice, and I'll have a home, and I'll have a home. The farmer taking a boll weevil, he put him in in the sand. People, when he said to the farmer, you treat me like a man, and I'll have a home, and I'll have a home. I will have a home, I will have a home, and I'll have a home, and I will have a home. The old man said to the old lady, baby, what do you think of that? I got one of them four wheels out of my brand new Dutton hat, and it's full of hope, and it's full of hope. The old lady said to the old man, I'm trying my level best. Keep these four wheels out of my brand new cotton dress, and it's full of hope, and it's full of hope. It is full of hope, it is full of hope. It is full of hope, it is full of hope. The farmer, he said to the merchant, I never made but one bale. Before I let you have that last one, I will suffer and die and deal. And I'll have a home, and I will have a home. If anybody should ask you people who come for this song, tell him it's you to let better. He's just been yelling gone. He's looking for home. 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 He's looking for home.
Well, now we turn from work to play. A Sookie Jump tune, a tune that's still popular at dances down in Texas. Yaller Gal.
Now this is Yaller Gal. The boys is go to a sookie jump, and to the girl down there, she was named Yaller Gal. When they go to the sookie jump, they call for Yaller Gal, and they get to dance, they sing about Yaller Gal. Oh, my yaller, oh, my yaller, oh, my yaller gal. My yaller, 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 oh, my yaller gal. My yaller, 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 oh, my yaller gal. My yaller, 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 oh, my yaller gal. I went home with the 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 yaller gal. My yaller, 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 oh, my yaller gal. My yaller, 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 oh, my yaller gal. My yaller, oh, my yaller, oh, my yaller gal. My yaller, oh, my yaller, oh, my yaller gal. I got stuck on the yaller gal. I got stuck on the yellow gal. I got stuck on the yellow gal. I got stuck on the yellow gal. Yellow, 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 yellow gal. Never said a word to the yellow gal. I never said a word to the yellow gal. Never said a word. Yellow gal, I never said a word to the yellow gal. The yellow, oh, yellow, oh, yellow gal. The yellow, oh, yellow, oh, yellow gal. The yellow, 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 yellow gal. The yellow, 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 oh, yellow gal. She's pretty and fat, yellow gal. Pretty and fat, yellow gal. She got pretty hair, yellow gal. She got pretty hair, yellow gal. The yellow, 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 oh, yellow gal. The yellow, 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 oh, yellow gal. The yellow, oh, yellow, oh, yellow gal. The yellow, oh, yellow, oh, yellow gal.
More play. This time a children's play song. Ha ha this away, ha ha that away.
And this year's children's playing. Down home they play like little frogs in a mill pond. They get around and grab one another by the arm and they dance around, they sing. And if they sing, they dance the way they're singing. If they say ha ha this away, that means this away. They ha ha that away, that means you're going from me to somebody else. Ha ha this is way, ha ha that way, ha ha this is when then oh then. When I was a little boy, little boy, little boy, when I was a little boy, 12 years old. Papa went and left me, left me, left me. Papa went and left me, so I was told. Ha ha this is way, ha ha that way, ha ha this is when then oh then. Mama come and got me, got me, got me. Mama come and got me to save my soul. Mama never whipped me, whipped me, whipped me. Mama never whipped me, so I was told. Ha ha, this is whip, ha ha, that away. Ha ha, this is when they know then. I went to school, went to school, went to school. I went to school and I was 12 years old. Obey the rules, the rules, the rules. Obey the rules as I was told. Ha ha, this is way, ha ha, that way. Ha ha, this is when they know then. went to a teacher, went to a teacher to save my soul. Teacher was a preacher, teacher was a preacher, so I was told. Ha ha, this way, ha ha, that way, ha ha, this way, and then oh then. Learned my lesson, learned my lesson to save my soul. Wasn't that a blessing, blessing? Wasn't that a blessing? So I was told, all oh, this way, all oh, that way, all oh, this way, and then oh then, all oh, this way, all oh, that way, all oh, this way, and then oh then.
Leadbelly winds up today's proceedings with one of the wailingest, lonesomest blues you've ever heard, Leaving Blues.
Now this is Leaving Blues. What I mean is leaving time. This man had lived with a woman 20 years, and he's waiting for the TPS shop. And when he coming home that evening, his time to come home was 5 o'clock. She got behind the door, and just as he walked to the yard gate to come in, she jumped out behind the door and threw up both hands. She said, "You can't come in here no more." He said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Well, I don't want you." He said, "Can I get in my clothes?" She said, "No." He said, "You can't come." And he turned around. Now get in the blue. Yes, I'm leaving, leaving, mama. Woo. But I don't know which way to go. I'm leaving, mama. But I don't know which way to go. Cause that woman I've been living with for 20 years, mama, says she don't want me no more. And I feel like walking, mama. Woo. And I feel like lying down. I feel like walking, mama, and I feel like lying down. Cause the woman I've been loving with for 20 years, mama, Lord, she done sold me down. Brother, see my coffin coming. Woo! Lord and Lord and my back door. Brother, see my coffin coming, mama. Lord and Lord and my back door. Then he had a good looking woman tell me to my face, mama, that she can't use me no more. I got holes in my pocket, baby. Woo! I got patches on my pants. I got holes in my pocket, mama. I got patches on my pants. I'm behind in my house rent, mama. Landlord, he wanted all in his back. Why don't we get it on? Everything I'll do is wrong. Tell me what the reason I'm not pleasing you. If I kiss you, you'll be mad. If I don't, you'll feel bad. Tell me what the reason I'm not pleasing you. You can go your way, I can go my way. Go from door to door. I done give you every nickel that I have to you, mama. You know I ain't got no more. I have tried and then I'll try. But still you ain't satisfied. Tell me what the reason I'm not pleasing you.
You have been listening to Folk Songs of America, featuring the great folk singer, Beauty Leadbelly Leadbetter. If you'd like a copy of the words of Grey Goose, one of the songs you heard on today's program, just write to Station WNYC, Municipal Building, New York City, and enclose a 3-cent stamp. Leadbelly will be back again next week with his friend Miss Ann Grant. And for the very first time, Hootie says, we'll hear a lady singing work songs. This program was written, produced, and announced by Amnon Valver. This is the Municipal Broadcasting System.
I have a number of things I want to go over with you today, and the first one is a really strange reason to oppose helping homeless people. This is just bizarre. In the state of Tennessee, they've been debating a bill dealing with homelessness. And in the midst of the debate, Republican State Senator Frank Nicely stood up. He's from Strawberry Plains, Tennessee. And he said, hey, you know what? Being homeless isn't the end of the world. Hitler was able to do things and make something of himself even after being homeless for a little while. Now, he's not saying killing Jews is good, but why do you go to Hitler as an example of someone who entered the history books after being homeless? It's bizarre.
Speaker, I haven't given you all a history lesson in a while, and I want to give you a little history on homelessness.
Please.
1910, Hitler decided to live on the streets for a while. So for 2 years, Hitler lived on the streets and practiced his oratory and his body language and how to connect with masses, and then went on to lead a life that got him in the history books. So a lot of these people, it's not a dead end. They can come out of these homeless camps and have a productive life, or in Hitler's case, a very unproductive life.
God, I get he's not saying, you know, it was delightful. Hitler was homeless, and then he came out and he was able to kill 6 million Jews. I get that he's not saying that, but why do you have to point to Hitler? And also, if Hitler chose to be homeless in order to practice his oratory skills and body language, most homeless people are not trying to build public speaking skills by being homeless. Mention, you know, the singer Jewel. At one point, was really living in her car. She really was. Horrible backstory to it. Or actor Jim Carrey once lived in his car on his sister's front lawn, although that's not even really being homeless in the sense that a lot of people are homeless. Or why Hitler? And it's this very strange, it's not an obsession, but it's like, why are they thinking of Hitler so much to make positive points? And here the point is, listen, it's not that bad to be in these homeless camps. People can end up in the history books, even after being homeless. Look at Hitler. These people are very strange, and I think that there's something extraordinarily wrong with them. I want to talk about the latest grift scam from the Republican Party. There's a very good article in Truthout about this. Trump and Republicans are raking in millions of dollars with these fascist fundraising emails. Now, many of you have written to me about these emails. Many in our audience, they don't even know how they ended up on the Republican email list and on Trump's email list. Truthout's report is it's mind-blowing. Trump remains the highest totaling fundraiser in the Republican Party. Experts say the fundraising emails fueling his political ambitions increasingly echo conspiracy theories and employ fascist rhetoric. That's true. I've seen them. Trump's fundraising emails helped generate $378 million in 2020, and there's $110 million in Trump's war chest as of a couple months ago. That's more than what's been reported by the RNC and DNC combined. The fundraising success suggests Trump's messaging resonates with many Republicans. Trump's deceptive fundraising emails are not just obnoxious. If you're a supporter, subscribe to Trump's email list, you're told sinister forces are destroying a nation that rightfully belongs to patriots like you. Only Trump can save America from humiliation. This is classic 20th century rhetoric. We don't have to say Hitler, because it's really more like Mussolini. It's really more like others. Some appeals appear to operate like a sweepstakes, letting you meet Trump in person or go to a top secret rally. Now, we've already talked before about how at many of these things, Trump's not there. There was one promoted as like have lunch with Trump, but only Lindsey Graham was going to be there. They also use language like Trump's inner friend circle, where a select few will be exposed to confidential information he won't trust other people with. And that is similar to the QAnon stuff. It's similar to these, you know, fights against elite cabals and so on and so forth. This is classic. This is a clinic in reactionary fear-mongering. We live in a society where so many people just freely will turn money over to rich people that openly despise them. And that is what we are seeing here. This is the giving culture where these reactionaries who Trump has spent, listen, guys, we've said it before. Trump, as a rich guy from New York, has spent his life trying to be kept away from the people that make up the bulk of his base, the people giving the small dollar donations, because that's all that they can afford at the end of the day. And it is what his campaign has been built on. Trump doesn't like these people, but he will grift them out of every last dollar. The emails are also really a study into cults. And I know I've said this before, but I've recently been reading about the Charles Manson cult. And when you read the interviews that the cult members would give to law enforcement when it all kind of fell apart, the language and the demeanor and the tone is so similar to that which we hear from Trump supporters today. And, you know, as I've said before, I don't want anyone getting scammed. I don't want anyone getting scammed. And at the same time, at what point do you say these people are determined to be scammed? They're determined to give Trump the money. They're falling for the fascistic rhetoric. They're doing all of it. I don't know. I don't know at what point we say we just kind of can't protect these people anymore. I don't know when we get there, but it seems like we're probably pretty close. Very quickly, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but some people wrote to me again and they said, what is going on with the N-word being used by failed former President Donald Trump? This is starting to get really strange. I almost think Trump's trying to just appear to be provocative. Trump multiple times now has referred to nuclear or nuclear, depending on your pronunciation preference, as the N-word. And now he did it again at some kind of event. I don't know if this is a fundraiser or a party or what it is. Trump now saying, hey, everybody went crazy when I referred to nuclear as the N-word. Take a look.
We have the greatest nuclear force in the world. You don't want to do that. You know, I call it the N-word, okay? I said that to a group of people. They said, the N-word, oh, he said a horrible thing. I said, no, the nuclear word is what I thought. He said, oh, he said a horrible thing, the N-word. And I said, no, the N-word is the nuclear word. The nuclear word is something that's not supposed to be discussed. You don't talk about it. You don't talk about it, but...
Why are people even clapping? Like, it is completely incoherent what he's saying, and people are clapping because Trump says you're not supposed to talk about the nuclear. What?
Putin's been talking about it. Yeah, he's a major company, a serious nuclear power, and he's talking about it.
Okay. So Trump now is referencing when he went on Fox News program. I don't even know what it's called. It's a program with Stuart Varney. It's called, I don't even know what the show is called. Stuart Varney's program on Fox Business. And he played the same kind of coy game.
Well, and hope to God you never have to use it, because it would be, that would be the tragedy of all tragedies. But if we didn't have it, we couldn't talk. But I listened to him constantly using the N-word. That's the N-word. And he's constantly using it, the nuclear word. And we never talk it. We say, oh, he's a nuclear power.
What do you guys think this is about? Is this some kind of a dog whistle where white supremacists, I'm making this up, by the way, guys. Is this a dog whistle where Trump is signaling to white supremacists, I can't go around using the real N-word, but I'm going to say the N-word and pretend I'm talking about nuclear, but I'm actually talking about the N-word. Is it a dog whistle that only some people understand? Is it Trump trying to just be provocative by using the term N-word, even if it has nothing to do with the actual N-word? I don't know what he's trying to do. It's very, very strange. One last bonus clip just about how weird things are that are going on lately. Here's Trump talking about when he met Matt Gaetz' wife. This was over the weekend, I guess, at Mar-a-Lago. It's just all very bizarre.
And I do remember when they met, he came up, I said, who the hell is that man? Not that I noticed those things, but I said, who's that? I said, Matt, I don't know how well you get along, but assuming you get along, that's the one for you. And now it's you've come a long way together, haven't Savage, huh? It's a great couple, and we appreciate it, and we love you both, and we're with you all the way.
Real Weekend at Bernie's vibe starting to go there at Mar-a-Lago, but very strange. What's this N-word stuff about, guys? Let me know. I really don't understand it. You can find me on Twitter at D Pacman. This is one of the last times I'm going to mention this because we're doing the event in a few days. Tuesday, April 19, 6 p.m., we're doing a town hall event. Town hall events are where you get to ask me questions. You get to berate me for whatever you want to berate me for. It's wide open. This will be streaming live. So if you want to listen to the town hall, it'll be live at 6 p.m. on the Pacman Live YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/PacmanLive. It won't be on the regular YouTube channel. It won't be on Facebook. It won't be on Twitch. It will only be at youtube.com/PacmanLive. Tuesday, April 19th, 6 p.m. If you want to call in, then it's going to be via Discord at davidpacman.com/discord. If you're not a member, everybody's welcome to call in. However, if you do become a member, we are going to have a priority path for you to get on the air for our paid members. Everybody will get an opportunity, but it'll be easier if you're a member, and you can sign up at joinpacman.com. So that's Tuesday, but still a full show of stuff coming up for you today. The David Pacman Show, of course, depends on your support through the membership program. We do an extra show every day for our members. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. We also have the upcoming David Pacman Show Town Hall on Tuesday, April 19th, and members will get priority access during the Town Hall, which is an amazing thing. But let's not wait. Let's hear from people right now. We take calls via Discord on Fridays at davidpacman.com/discord. And we are going to start today with John from Philly. John from Philly, you're on the air. John from Philly, please unmute yourself. You're on the air and you could talk to me if you unmuted. And last chance for John from Philly. Well, that's really too bad. That's not a particularly auspicious start. Let's put it that way. Why don't we go instead to Evan from, is it pronounced Harrogate?
It's Harrogate, David.
Harrogate. Welcome, sir.
No, thank you very much. I had a question just about kind of Argentine public opinion on the Falklands, if that's okay.
Sure.
It's kind of a three-part question because I don't really know how to get the public and sort of government opinion on the issue. So I was just kind of wondering, do you know what the kind of public opinion or what the government think is? What is your opinion? And it might not be analogous, but do you think there's any kind of Taiwan type analogy to it at this point or not?
I don't think that with the Falklands, there's much of a Taiwan analogy, at least that I would be able to articulate. But this is a good question. It's the 40-year anniversary of the Falklands War. The Falklands are these islands off the coast of Argentina. And I am from Argentina, and I know that people may expect me to have some particular hot take or maybe even a biased view because I'm from Argentina. I mean, listen, my understanding of public opinion in Argentina is that most Argentinians believe that the Falklands should be Argentinian. My view is that's not at all clear to me. If you look at the history, I don't know the full history of the Falklands, but you can definitely find periods in the hundreds of years ago where different populations were there to say who controlled it. I just am not enough of a student of it to say. But to me, go ahead.
I think it was French originally, and then it was kind of abandoned for a while, and then it was kind of flicked between Spanish and majority British sort of.
Yeah. And so listen, for me, sometimes you'll see Argentinian soccer matches and people unveil flags that say the Falkland Islands are Argentinian and stuff like that. For me, it's an unusual hill to look to die on. I recently saw, because of the anniversary on Argentinian news, they brought like three Argentinian veterans. And the framing of the entire segment was like, obviously the islands are Argentinian, when it's like not at all clear from history that that's the case. And I know that people on both sides will make very strong arguments. I think it's politically ambiguous at best.
Yeah, fair enough. I think because one of my friends works in the oil industry out there, I think if you have the Falkland stamp on your passport, you're not allowed to go to Argentina.
That may be still the case. That's similar to there are Middle Eastern countries where if you've been to Israel, you're not allowed to go in. That reminds me of that. There's one other historical note I would mention. At the time 40 years ago when this war took place, it was very stupid to think that Argentina was going to be able to beat, you know, the UK in a war. Like, obviously that wasn't going to happen. And there was a very cynical nature with which there was propaganda value to appearing or attempting to fight this war because of what was going on in Argentina at the time, starting to get out of this, military dictatorship government and this type of thing. And so a lot of people would look at it and say, it seemed really stupid to think that Argentina's military could fight the UK's, and it was. And the reason was it had propaganda value to some degree.
All right, okay. Cool. Well, yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thank you so much for the call. Yeah, good. I figured at some point someone would ask about that because of the timing, and someone did. Let's go to our friend BitDefender from Cancun, Mexico. This is not Eric from Cancun. This is a different Cancun caller who goes by BitDefender. Bit, you're on.
Hello, David.
Hello.
I hope you're well. I wanted to talk about something that happened in Mexico that I think some Americans ought to know, just in case something similar happens in the States.
Okay.
So the 10th of April, we had a special election of sorts, elección de revocación de mandato, which is essentially an election where you go to vote to get rid of the president.
It's almost like a no confidence vote of the people, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now it sounds sort of democratic, but the reality of it is that it's something that mostly exists in autocratic countries and countries that, well, leaders that want to campaign constantly. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Especially in countries that pretend or have democratic systems that, you know, have electoral law of sorts, but you very well know that the elections are not fair and free.
Sure.
You know, Venezuela, Ecuador, some other Latin American countries have this form, and now Mexico has it. Given the rise of these forms of, you know, government and governors, do you think we will see something similar in the States?
I don't think so. I think it would be how presidential elections run, at least in theory, is so set in stone that I don't believe that there's going to be the putting in the instatement of such a mechanism. And also, you know, as you point out, one of the ideas of it, the propaganda value of it, is that you can kind of constantly be running an election, and that can sometimes help to coalesce and organize people. The Republican Party has already figured out how to do the same thing by saying Democrats are going to try to steal it, which is what they did in 2020. And so they already kind of have a mechanism to make that rallying cry. So no, I don't expect that to be instated in the United States.
Also, now that you mention it, when, you know, given the nature of electoral law in the States, what gives you so much confidence that, you know, electoral law is so set in stone? You know, me coming from a country where we have an actual federal institute dedicated to electoral management, and the States don't really have one, you know?
I mean, I don't, maybe I'm naive to think that, but the only real sense I have is that if anything was going to structurally change the way elections are done, it would be something like the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, where states can decide.
Oh, yeah.
We'll just give our electors to the winner of the popular vote. But beyond that, there's not really any serious initiatives there. I mean, they're trying to steal it by not officially changing the big picture, but by doing voter suppression at the state level, strategic voter ID, closing polling places. They're looking to do it piecemeal rather than with any big mechanism like a public no confidence vote or that type of thing. It's just what they're doing. So I'm basing it on what I see.
Absolutely. No. Well, that's about it. Thank you, dude.
All right, thank you. There's Bitdefender from Cancun. Let's go next to Phil from California. Phil, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, David. I had a question about propaganda in general.
Okay.
And it seems like with propaganda, it seems to have an origin where there's a voluntary actor who kind of promulgates the initial idea of propaganda and disperses it. But at what point does the propaganda become like a feedback loop and people that are propagating it also are consuming it and falling for it?
Oh, it happens very quickly. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to just say, for example, it seems like Putin may have fallen for his own propaganda with his initial attack on the Ukraine, and how poorly his army performed was probably partially to believe in his own propaganda about liberating Ukraine and that he'd be welcome with open arms.
I'm not sure about that. I don't think Putin was that naive, but I think your principle is very much there. I see it much more like in the current Republican Party, where I see it the other way, where it's sort of the people that fell for the Trump is really the winner propaganda end up spreading it. And then they end up believing it because people they've convinced start repeating it themselves. So that's the feedback loop that I've seen. I don't know that the Putin example, I don't know how sure I am of the Putin example, but your idea is absolutely spot on.
Thank you, David.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for the call. A nice, concise call there. Let's go next to Stephanie in Texas. Stephanie, you're on the air. Stephanie in Texas, you're on the air. Please unmute and you'll be able to talk to me.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me? Hi.
Yes, I can.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
And I owe you an apology, actually. I tried calling a couple months ago, and I got so excited that instead of unmuting my call, I hung up on you, so I apologize for that.
Oh, no.
So anyway, and I also wanted to just let you know that we're not all crazy here in Texas, but good. Just how crazy are things in Texas right now. And I wanted to ask you, thank you for the, you did a piece on the murder charges being dropped against a woman who tried to seek an abortion.
Yes.
And I, you know, there's a lot of things I could, there's a lot of things I'm trying to like, you know, to ask you about, because there's a lot of things going on here right now, but that's one of the ones I think that's really first and foremost. And do you think that that's something that my hope is it'll lose steam over time as people maybe get faced with these more, if more charges come up and people start realizing it's more of a, you know, a wild goose chase to some extent. Do you think it's going to, in your opinion, do you think it's going to start being less of an issue, or do you think it's become, people are going to try and push it more?
I think, unfortunately, Stephanie, I think the whole charges for abortions thing, I think it's going to be a new tool that we're going to see a lot of. And in particular, in late June, the Supreme Court is going to issue a decision on a state abortion case. And their decision could effectively overturn Roe v. Wade. If that happens, there are 22 states that essentially ban abortion. Those laws will then become the law of the land. And I think you're going to see tons of people charged criminally for seeking abortions. And it's going to be a dystopian nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so unfortunate because, you know, obviously the Roe v. Wade is a huge tool that people have been able to take advantage of. And it's just not, you know, I'm hoping that that won't be the case. But yeah, unfortunately, like you said, in June, we kind of have a deadline here. Now, have you interviewed Beto O'Rourke yet? Or is that something that if you have I missed it? And if you haven't, do you plan on doing that?
He's not been on. We're interested in having him on. Mm-hmm. So far, he's not shown any interest in being on. Okay. So if people want to tweet to Beto and say, hey, go to the David Pakman Show, we would love to have him.
Yeah, I think I follow him. And I've also volunteered to phone bank and not knock on doors for him. So hopefully they'll get some word out there. But yeah, it's just I'm hoping that he'll have some pull if he gets elected, hopefully. It's just been so kind of crazy. And I get so frustrated when people say, we don't like it, then move. You know, that's a really generic thing to say to people, because we can't just move. It's like our home and our business is here, and
people
everything
have
else.
Families
so
and everything. Yeah,
yeah,
no, it's
yeah,
it's crazy.
For sure.
And, Stephanie, and, listen, and still- can you get a good bagel in Texas, or is that impossible?
I guess it depends. If I want to go drive through for bagel, I go to the Einstein Brothers, which I'm sure is like, you know, pretty basic. Oof, but I make my own bagels in the air fryer. Actually, it's pretty funny. Like I make them with, I have an air fryer and I found a really good recipe for, it's not like your traditional bagel. So it's a little bit more like it's a little moister. It's like I use Greek yogurt and flour. So it's just like three ingredients basically.
Oh,
and
boy.
I put it in my air fryer and sounds it's really
more
good.
Like a, sounds more like a cake than a bagel.
It kind of is, but it's like, it's really good because it's like, you know, it's higher in protein. It's a little bit better for you than like all the carbs in the regular bagels.
So. Sure.
We're just
all
trying,
right, Stephanie.
We
well,
try all kinds of crazy
it
things.
Sounds complicated down there, but I appreciate you calling in.
Yeah. Well, just kind of keep us in your thoughts and follow us because we've got a lot of interesting things going on here.
Absolutely. Bagels aside, a lot going on in Texas. There's Stephanie from Texas.
100%.
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but I'm still taking more of your calls. Just hang on. We will be right back. All right, let's go back to Discord, davidpakman.com/Discord. We're hearing from people in the audience, the most important people. Let's go to Keir from Scotland. Keir, you're on the air.
Hi, David. I just wondered if you had any thoughts. I don't know if you're aware of what's happened in the UK today, but our Prime Minister for the last months started out denying that he'd had any parties in number 10 Downing Street. Then he said he didn't know that it was a party. and then he said, oh, yes, it was a party, but I wasn't aware. And now today he's been handed out... him, his wife, and the Chancellor of the Exchequer have all been handed out £50 fines for breaching lockdown rules that they wrote. And they are all, and there's over 50 now people who live in Downing Street that have all been handed out these fines. He's got over a 75% dislike with the public today in polls today. I was just wondering if you had any comment on it or if you thought, because he's refusing to resign, as is his chancellor.
On the resignation, I can't comment on the resignation piece. You know, it's really for those. I want to leave that to voters and others in the UK to comment on. But if there's anything good about this, now we can look at it and say a £50 fine is pathetically low. And you're sure that's true. But I think it's good that at least they're being held to the standards where in some places it would just be excused. If that's the punishment that should be assigned, I'm glad that it's being assigned if the rules were broken. Also, like, how much of this has to do with the what is the definition of a party in the UK?
Well, this is the thing, is that he wrote the rules.
Right.
The people around him wrote the rules about what a party was, but he doesn't seem to know himself what a party is, which is absolutely insane to me. And just while I've got you here as well, do you think this is going to push perhaps towards Scotland getting another independence campaign?
This specifically, Boris Johnson's party, you mean?
Oh, just the litany of things that he's done over the last few years of just lying in Parliament, illegally prorogued Parliament. He lied to the Queen. He's just, the list of things I could say, I'm just wondering, like, is this going to be the final thing where the people of Scotland are just going to say, enough is enough. We're done with you.
I don't know what will be the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back. But my sense for several years in reading about Scotland has been that there's at least some clamoring for another independence vote. I mean, you tell me, is that the sense you get?
I think so, yes. I think there's a lot of people who previously either didn't vote or voted to stay in the union because of, again, lies told in the thing, told in the referendum, the run-up to the referendum, who have now just had enough. They're fed up with the constant lies and just the constant nonsense coming out of Westminster. They just want done.
I'm totally sensitive to that. And, you know, it's the people of Scotland that need to decide. I'm not taking a position one way or the other. I'm wondering if you, like, are you aware and does it concern you that there may be economic difficulties in Scottish independence? Is that a discussion?
No, that's not really a problem. There's a lot of sort of people who are like, oh, you take more from England than you don't. It's more complex than that because we have a lot of offshore oil and there's a lot of other ways, like we can make a lot of money out of tourism. The real problem is we can't have a referendum, a legally binding referendum, unless Westminster says we're allowed to.
Right.
Boris Johnson has outright stated he will not allow that to happen.
Sure.
So even if the MSPs decide that they're going to have a referendum, he can just ignore it and say, no, you're not getting independence. I don't care what the referendum you had says.
Right. That is a difficult situation.
Yeah. Very difficult.
It doesn't really feel like self-determination in that sense.
It's a bit of a sticky situation. I don't know how you get out of it.
Yeah. Well, Keir, I really appreciate your call and for you filling us in on what's going on there.
Oh, well, thank you for your time, sir.
All right. There is Keir from Scotland. A beautiful phone call for sure. Let's go next to Raul in Los Angeles. Raul, go ahead.
Hey, I'm just curious. I've got two questions. I guess kind of a vague, complicated one and a bit more of an easy, specific one. I'll let you choose. Which do you want?
Well, I'll take the easy one any day.
How do you think the left will maintain power during the midterm?
It's not clear that they will.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not looking good.
That's kind of how I feel. I feel like it's going to kind of be this constant cycle of every 2 years, the general power structure switches between either the president who was just elected or who won during the midterm. And it's just kind of a chaotic system. And I, as a young person, feel kind of lost within it. I'm more of a leftist, but neither party really speaks to me. You know, last candidate was Bernie, and now I'm just kind of lost feeling.
So what do you plan to do in November? Do you even plan to what's your plan?
I'll vote Democrat. That's kind of just what I've always done. I kind of tend to just vote for who tends to my politics.
Sure.
But I also kind of just prefer to focus on local stuff because that's where my vote actually matters. A lot of young people think that just because of the electoral college, their vote doesn't matter when local stuff you actually have an impact on.
Sure. Well, I think it's wise for you to pay attention. I think it makes sense to vote in the midterms nationally, but to focus locally makes a lot of sense to me. If more people did it, the left would be stronger.
Yeah. It's definitely a flaw of the left is I see a lot of people having strong ideals, but not exactly context within politics to vote.
Certainly. You in Northern or no, sorry, you said LA. What part of LA are you in?
San Fernando Valley.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that's north of the city, right?
Yeah. It's LA County as well. You know, it's largest metropolitan in North America, something like that. So
that's what they tell me. All right. Well, I appreciate the call.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, there's Raul from LA, disheartened, but staying engaged, which I think is a great thing. Let's go to William from Las Vegas. William, you're on the air.
Hello, David. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. I just got back from Vegas a few days ago.
I know. I was actually down at the Strip. I was kind of keeping an eye to see if I spotted you, but chances are I was pretty far from you. I was wondering if you could help me craft a water cooler argument, which I'm sure a lot of other people are having.
Okay.
And it may sound off the rails, but we'll end it together. So from my understanding, in the early 2000s, school districts started to teach Common Core math. And it took a while for teachers to get trained on how to teach Common Core math with a lot of resources, curriculum, testing. And then it's still working out, so we're actually using that as the standard. So knowing that or understanding that with the argument that critical race theory is being taught right now, wouldn't it make sense that it took time to teach teachers a graduate level, from what I understand, a social or humanities elective? And I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. Would it make sense that it took time to instruct teachers how to teach this very complicated theory from K to 12, even though it's not necessarily in the curriculum? And every time I had this argument, my question is, well, which curriculum is teaching this? Which public school, because they all publish their curriculum. I've not gotten an answer on that. But that's kind of where I'm formulating my argument as we go towards the midterms.
What is the argument you're trying to make? You're trying to make the argument that critical race theory just isn't being taught. I mean, it's basically not being taught. That's true as far as K through 12 is concerned. But what is the argument you're trying to formulate?
So you're right. So it's basically an association with when people say they're teaching critical race theory. I say, well, how is this happening? Well, they train teachers for years how to teach Common Core math. And we've not heard anything about teachers being taught critical race theory. So basically it's a debunking of that.
Oh, interesting. Okay, let me see if I understand. So you're saying we knew for so long that this thing called Common Core math was coming in, and we know teachers were being trained on how to teach it because the teachers yes. can't teach it unless they're trained. If yes. critical race theory is really everywhere, how is it everywhere given that the teachers haven't even been trained how to teach it?
We landed it safely. That's exactly the point I was trying to make. Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the problem is here's how the right will respond. They'll say, no, here's the thing. The colleges that the teachers went to, their entire framework is critical race theory. So the teachers already have the knowledge. They'll say something like that. So I don't know that you would convince too many people, unfortunately.
And my maneuver to that is, well, teachers don't teach anything that's not on the curriculum.
They'll say, but they are. That they'll just say, no, but they are teaching it. They're teaching it.
Oh, even. So it's the no true Scotsman that they'll come back with.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's an uphill battle, my friend, but I'm glad you're thinking about it.
Well, I'm definitely thinking local, and hopefully you enjoyed Las Vegas while you were here.
I did.
Good. All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Very good. Take care. There is a beautiful phone call from Las Vegas. Hard to beat that. Why don't we go next to, let's go to Casey from Oklahoma City. Casey, you're on the air.
Hey, David, you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
With the Texas Heartbeat Act, Oklahoma Planned Parenthood, I mean, they saw a jump, I think, in roughly like 2,500% in patients.
Hmm.
But Governor Stitt, who's often the little brother to states and governors like, you know, DeSantis and Abbott, just signed a law that would basically upend it here in Oklahoma and ban it.
Yep.
To include like $100,000 in fines plus 10-year prison sentence.
We did cover that story earlier this week. It's crazy what Oklahoma is doing on abortion. Yeah.
Yeah. But I find that we often talk about, at least in the counter, we talk about rape and incest, but one of the things I never hear about is teen pregnancy. And if we look at the top states, teen pregnancy is greater than 30 per every 1,000 births. Guess what? They're all Republican states.
Of course.
South Carolina, Arizona, Alabama, Tennessee. You know, I can go down the list. Do you think it would help these pro-life people to think twice when we frame it that the teen pregnancies who are their daughters? Do you want them to keep that child, or do they say, well, morally, my daughter should keep it?
Usually they will sidestep this issue. You're absolutely right, which is the places that have the highest rates of teen pregnancy are mostly red states. That's absolutely true. Republicans will sidestep this by saying, if we were correctly teaching abstinence only sex education, they wouldn't be getting pregnant in the first place. Now, of course, they're wrong, but they want the total package, which is ban abortion and teach abstinence only. You know it doesn't work. I know it doesn't work. But that's what they will say.
I mean, I would think the counter to that is, isn't that what you already preach in your states? And obviously it's not working.
It's not working. No, but then they'll come in and they'll say, no, but these public schools with the critical race theory and the gender stuff and the teaching kids how to have sex and these things, they'll just say it's what we want, but it's not actually happening. Teachers are injecting it into the classroom.
Yeah, and it's I left a voicemail last night about a radio station here locally, and if you go to like the FCC, they can't do anything as far as freedom of speech, which I'm all for, you know, freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But the propaganda from, because they're playing like InfoWars and talking about demonic baby pedophile, all this stuff is yep. just infuriating, and I don't know the solution to it because it's just making people stronger in their beliefs that are just untrue.
It's lunacy. It's lunacy.
Yeah.
Well, listen, good luck there in Oklahoma, because it's getting pretty grim. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. All right, Casey, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
All right. There's Casey from Oklahoma, the site of a horrifying abortion bill. Let's go to Tristan from Boston. Tristan, you're on the air.
Hey, David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Cool. It occurred to me recently, have you considered writing a book?
Yes. In fact, I'm working on a proposal right now. It's a big project. It's a long process, but I am working on that right now.
Wow, that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
If you don't mind me asking, what is the subject?
I don't want to say, because we're still workshopping it, and then I might end up kind of self-cucking. You know, I don't want to do that.
Does it include elements of many subjects?
It actually does. It actually does, yeah. It's a multidisciplinary proposal.
I mean, that would feel like the main topics, the ideas for the main topics would be pretty obvious.
Well, we'll find out, won't we, Tristan?
considering your fields of expertise.
Sure, sure. Yeah, no, when I have more to say about it, I absolutely will, but it's something I am working on.
That's actually great to hear. I would 100%. I'm totally pumped to hear that.
Well, good. It sounds like at least I'd sell one copy.
Can't wait to see it, dude.
All right. Tristan, thank you so much.
Awesome.
All right. There's Tristan from Boston asking about a book project. Thanks to everybody who called in. My apologies to everybody I couldn't get to. We'll take calls again. And for now, we will take a very quick break and be right back. All right, let's review this week's mailbag. If you have a message for me, you can email it to info@davidpakman.com. Many, many messages come in every week. I think probably 1,000 or so. And we can only look at, 10 or so. So just understand that. Please be polite. Please be respectful. info@davidpakman.com. All right, first email this week came in from Christopher, who also signed his email Keith. I don't know. Christopher says, after this weekend's Trump rally, "You talk crap about Trump. How much is your gas now compared to when Trump was in office?" Well, I drive an electric car, so my gas hasn't changed, but I understand the point. "How about your grocery bill?" Yes, it's higher. But what does Joe Biden have to do with that? "How about everything you buy bring way up with the Democratic leadership? Don't understand why you dummies can't look at numbers instead of your personal political opinion. F Biden and F you." Well, that's exactly what I do. Regardless of my political opinion, which is I prefer Biden to Trump, I have to look at the numbers when it comes to gas prices, inflation, etc. And when I look at the numbers, I see that those things are up all over the world. And I see that those are not phenomena that depend on the American president to any significant degree. I respect you too much in the audience to do my "what can presidents do about gas prices" rant a second, third, what it must be probably the fifth time now. So I'm not going to do that. But it is exactly because I do look at the facts that I come to the conclusions I come to. And Christopher, or Keith, I don't know, is welcome to call into my show anytime, and we can talk about it. Next, Gil wrote in, also about the Trump rally over the weekend, and said, "You seem to laugh at Donald Trump. I think you don't know very much. USA is a corporation. USA Inc. since yesterday. USA become a republic, like if was before. And one more thing, Donald know more than you about political rules in Michigan." Well, I couldn't possibly say it any better myself. And this is just such a wholesale destruction of my ideology and worldview that I won't even try to respond to Gil, because it's just too much. It's just overwhelming. Okay. Next email is from Darius. Darius says, "New subscriber here. You killed Air with Darlene. David, I stumbled on your YouTube videos a couple of years ago and have been evangelizing you to my friends and finally decided it's time to pay for solid journalism. So I am now a subscriber supporting the work you do. I love it. Just remember, I do commentary, not journalism. Important distinction. Darius goes on to say, however, your interview with Diana Swafford, it was Darlene Swafar. Okay, but it doesn't matter. I know who you mean. Put you in the category of why doesn't this guy have his own MSNBC or CNN show? Your interview, oh boy, was absolutely brilliant. You were respectful, even complimentary. Your poker face was amazing and critical to keep her from walking off. You parsed the oil issue brilliantly. Dude, you need an agent to up your game and get a broadcast cable show. This country needs people like you. Please try to do more interviews like these. Well, I really appreciate that. I have an agent. We are not trying to get me on MSNBC or CNN or Fox or whatever. I'm very happy with what I'm doing. I don't want to have 10 bosses at any of those places. I don't think they want me there either. But I so appreciate the kind words from Darius about this. And we are trying to get more of those interviews lined up with the 2020 candidates on the right and on the left. We're doing it all. We're doing it all. Next, let's go to an email from Teresa. Teresa said, is there a way I can gift more than one membership at a time? David said on air that there were over 600 hoping to become members. I'd like to offer several gifts anonymously. Thank you. Yeah, so Teresa is asking a perfect question. One of the biggest things people in the audience wanted was they wanted to be able to gift memberships on our website. They would write in, they would say, sir, I have a membership, but I want to give some memberships away. Can I do that? And up until 2 weeks ago, the answer was no. But we listened. We have a new plugin on our website, joinpacman.com, which when you go through the checkout now, there's a box and it says, is this a gift? And if you check the box, your membership will be added to our queue, which we can give away. We've given away about 100 memberships so far, thanks to gifts. But we do have now, it's not even 600, it's now 670 people waiting for a membership. So we are going to try, Teresa, to make this a possibility where you can just do 10 at a time, 20 at a time, 30, you know, just dump memberships in. We're going to try. But in the meantime, you can still gift individual memberships one at a time. What a generous audience. Beautiful. Spencer wrote in about my use of the term bad faith. Spencer says, hey, David, I've been watching your show for well over a year now and have a request that seems simple, but it may take some time to elaborate on the answer. Could you give a definition or explanation on the phrase bad faith in terms of political questions and comments? I personally haven't had an issue agreeing with you whenever you use it, but it may help others understand why you use that phrase to dismiss certain talking points and ideas from both the right and left. So here's the thing. There's two answers about what we mean by bad faith. The first one is you sort of know bad faith when you see it. And what I mean by that is you might remember when I appeared on the Jesse Lee Peterson show and he asked me, what is love? And I knew that it was a bad faith question to try to wrap me up into some kind of homophobic thing. And so I didn't even take it seriously. I said, you know, oh, Jesse, you know love when you see it. It's sort of ethereal. And I don't know what I said. I just kind of laughed it off. But what we mean by bad faith is that there's an intent to deceive or that you are not being genuine in your intention. So to give an example, when Marsha Blackburn asks Judge, now just soon to be Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, what is a woman? It's not that by definition, asking what a woman is a bad faith question. A five-year-old would ask lots of questions that are just, they don't have the information yet. What is a woman? Okay, great. Or a three-year-old. I don't know when kids ask, what's a woman? What's a man? But the point of the question is deceptive. It's not a mere curiosity. It's a bad faith attempt to get Judge Jackson to pigeonhole herself with one definition, which will then be turned and used against her for political reasons. So with bad faith, you have to understand